Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's Louisa Nicola. I'm a neurophysiologist and human performance coach. I'm the founder of NeuroAthletics, where our mission is to democratize brain health education so you can perform better, think faster, and live longer. What if depression, anxiety, infertility, insomnia, heart disease, erectile dysfunction, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's dementia, cancer, and many other health conditions that torture and shorten our lives actually have the same root cause? Our ability to prevent and reverse these conditions and feel absolutely incredible and perform at your peak physiological state is under our control and simpler than what we think. Enter in the amazing Dr. Casey Means, who is joining me on today's show. Casey is the founder of Levels, a health technology company with the mission of reversing the world's metabolic health crisis. And she's also the co-founder of True Med and an advocate for policy to change health incentives. Casey is a veteran on the podcast, and you've probably heard so many times, metabolic health, metabolic dysfunction. But team, listen to me. If you are battling minor signals of any type of bad energy in your body, it is often a warning sign that more life-threatening illnesses can emerge later in life. Bad energy, such as even fatigue, headaches, PCOS, all of these symptoms that sometimes we think of, I'll just strap on a Band-Aid, or I'll just, you know, have a Tylenol. Rather than just using the Band-Aid method, in today's episode, I'm going to tell you how you can actually find out what your risk is for these deadly diseases. In fact, in this episode, we actually go over the biomarkers that determine your risk for a deadly disease. We talk about the inexpensive tools to see inside your body and take action. We talk about the crucial links between sleep, circadian rhythm, metabolism. We talk about the dietary philosophies that are designed to confuse you, and six lifelong food principles that you should implement. We also talk about the flawed medical system. That's right, team. You have to be the actual advocate of your own health. That's what this podcast is about. Stop relying on other people, such as your doctors. I know that's harsh to say, but guys, you really need to take your health into your own hands. Nobody cares about your health more than you. So with that said, if you haven't subscribed, please go and smash the follow button. That's what it says now. It doesn't say subscribe. It says follow. Go do it now on Spotify and on Apple. Go and click it, because it turns out that we get thousands upon thousands of listens, but it doesn't really correlate with the following. So I don't know where you're finding me. If you're finding me through my Instagram, that's great, but make sure you follow the podcast. Also, I'm now spending a lot of time on YouTube, so I'm going to link my YouTube channel below. You can watch all of these episodes that I do, and there's also some bonus solo YouTube-only YouTube clips that I'm doing. So make sure you go through and subscribe to that too. I hope you enjoy this one. We'll get into the episode with Casey in a moment. But guys, I have to tell you, we will be talking about biomarkers in this episode. Biomarkers such as a lipid panel. We'll also be talking about C-reactive protein. We talk about a number of different other biomarkers that you can test. And what better way to test those than Inside Tracker? Inside Tracker is a personalized nutrition platform that analyzes data from your blood and DNA to help you better understand your body and reach your goals. I give Inside Tracker to almost everybody, because do you know how many people actually come up to me and say, Louisa, what blood biomarkers should I be testing? Like, where am I at in my health journey? You don't know anything about yourself until you lift the hood up and assess your blood. And not just that. Your blood, the person who analyzes your blood, or the AI that analyzes your blood, is actually more important than the person taking your blood. So, to make this entire process easy, Inside Tracker enable you to have your own personalized platform, which allows you to see the levels of all of these biomarkers, such as metabolic factors, lipids, hormones, all of that, and gives you specific specific directives that you can follow that relate to nutrition, behavioral modification, supplements, etc. If you are going to go and check this out, I really recommend the Ultimate Plan. This is where you can go well beyond generic blood work so you can really figure out what is going on under the hood. This specific blood test looks at 48 biomarkers. And the great news is you can get 20% off this Ultimate Package. Click the link below or simply go to insidetracker.com/Louisa. You can enter code Louisa20 for 20% off. Dr. Casey Means, welcome to the show. You're a veteran. You're a repeat offender. I'm so excited for you to be here.
I'm so happy to be here with you, Louisa.
Okay, we're going to get straight into it. And I want to start with something that you posted on your Instagram not too long ago. And it was a quote, and I'm going to read it to everybody. "It is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my 2 decades as editor of the New England Journal of Medicine." And then you further emphasized in the post that we should not be trusting our doctors or our scientists. Is that what you're saying?
I think what this quote really represents, Louisa, is a trend that we're seeing in America that is very concerning. We are amongst one of the sickest countries in the entire world. We are literally getting more chronically ill, more depressed, heavier, and more infertile every single year. Life expectancy is going down in the United States. And so it makes you scratch your head. The more we're spending on healthcare every year, the more nutrition studies that we're doing every year, the more studies on the minutiae of exercise that we're doing every year, the more gym memberships we're getting as Americans, the sicker we're getting. This is very odd, right? So it's like the more we're doing and the more research that we publish, actually the worst the outcomes are getting. And I think it makes you need to step back and really ask a question, which is, what is going on here? And I think a trend that's happening is that we as humans are essentially being asked by several industries to be essentially divorced from our common sense and divorced from just critically thinking about the choices of our lives for ourselves and actually giving up essentially all of our autonomy and our decision making to people external to us, to the experts. But you have to remember, like, there's no species in the wild that is systematically dealing with a chronic disease epidemic and obesity epidemic except for humans. And we're the ones with the quote unquote experts. And I think a key point is that science, healthcare, fitness, these are industries. These are big businesses. Healthcare is the largest industry in the world and the fastest growing industry in the world. And in many ways, seeding confusion and complexity into the conversation is what drives us to be confused and insatiably seeking a variety of different answers. And the more we can tell people and really like normalize these statements like, quote unquote, trust the science, the more we can make people feel like it's actually not within our power as human beings to just really understand what's right for us. We have to seek that external to us. So a real point that I think is important for us to internalize is that we shouldn't trust the science. We shouldn't trust doctors. We shouldn't trust influencers. You shouldn't trust me. We need to get back in touch with trusting ourselves. And that does not mean not reading the literature or blanketly rejecting what the doctor says or what the literature says. It means thinking critically for ourselves about what's in front of us, what are the conflicts of interest and the business models of the industries that we're taking information from and making decisions for ourselves and understanding our power as individuals with big old brains to make decisions and to know what's right and what's wrong. And when you get these studies coming out from like Tufts University in partnership with the NIH saying that Lucky Charms are healthier than eggs and beef, you need to be scratching your head and understanding what's going on here. And I personally think like we are living in the most exciting time in human history because we actually have the potential right now to be living the longest and the happiest lives in human history. We have all the tools and all the information to do that, but the opposite is happening. We are becoming more depressed and life expectancy is going down. And I think there's a few things that people can do to really take ownership of the opportunity that we have in front of us. Number one, that is understanding your own body deeply, realizing that you have the power to understand your body and how the choices you're making are affecting you. You actually don't need someone else to tell you that information. We are in a bio-wearables and direct-to-consumer lab testing revolution where we now literally can access more information about the internal workings of our bodies through wearables, bio-wearables, and direct-to-consumer labs, that we can know more information than our doctors ever knew about us before, and that can be delivered to us directly. That's number one. Number two is that we have access to essentially every major global tradition in the world, all of the learnings and the best of their wisdom, whether it's Ayurvedic medicine, whether it's Chinese medicine, whether it's indigenous wisdom, whether it's how they're doing things in Europe, and of course, America, we have access to all of that at our fingertips. No one's had that before. And we also, I think, have a lot of movement in our culture back towards really a sense of spiritual development. We need to get in touch with our innate body awareness. We need to be setting the boundaries in our life to have the time to be still enough and quiet enough to actually hear what our bodies are trying to tell us all the time through our symptoms and the way we feel after we eat and do things. So the combination of the bio-wearables and direct-to-consumer lab testing revolution, the access to every major global tradition's wisdom about health and well-being, and our ability to tune into our symptoms, see our symptoms as a gift and a way of our bodies talking to us, that is the answer for how we live the healthiest, longest lives in human history. It's not absconding all of our agency to external forces that have business models that may not be in our best interest.
I am completely in line with you, but now I'm going to sit back and play devil's advocate for all of the people listening who, A, may not have the, first of all, we're going to talk about money because maybe a lot of people are like, but hey, Dr. Casey, I can't afford to go and get these direct-to-consumer lab works done. I can't wear these wearables. Maybe I can't afford an Oura ring or a Whoop strap. That's the first part I want to tackle. The second part is you really talk about making yourself the owner, like taking care of your own health. Now, I have to step back and say, well, let me look at my 68-year-old mother and my 71-year-old father who rely solely and 100% on their PCP. They go to their doctor and they rely on her for their information. What about the people who just don't even know how to deconstruct medical information or these scientific studies? Like, what about these people?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think that there's a trend that's happening in our world where because there's literally, even in just the United States, $10 trillion of industry between healthcare and big food that so desperately want us to believe that we should not trust ourselves, that we do not have the capacity to understand these complex things like nutrition and our lab work. There's been this paternalistic, infantilizing culture that's been built into every layer of the system. We've literally told people, you know, eat this ultra processed food because it's convenient and it's quick. And then you can be out there climbing the corporate ladder and, you know, working and all this stuff, like outsource food to us. And we're not going to let you have access to your healthcare records because, you know, it might confuse you and it's dangerous. Like this is built into every layer of the system and it has disempowered people. It has made people feel like, yeah, I'm just going to put my trust outside of me. But I think the message that I'm really here to share is that I believe that every person, your parents, even young people, need to wake up to the forces, especially the economic reality of what's happening in our food and healthcare system and the dependency and disempowerment that are built into the system, so that we can even start the journey of figuring out some of these things for ourselves. Like, let's just take, you know, this concept of symptoms. In our culture, if you have a symptom like an achy knee or back pain or a headache, first thought is go get the Advil. It's like, we need to squash this. It's intolerable. And a reframe to that, you know, that's so normal. Have a fever, get the Tylenol. Have a sore knee, get the Advil. Because symptoms are a problem. But the reality is that symptoms are a gift. Symptoms are the body's way of telling us that the needs of the cell are not being met. Symptoms cannot arise in a vacuum. They do not arise out of thin air. They arrive necessarily out of cellular dysfunction. And cellular dysfunction is generally rooted in one of two things: the cells not getting what they need to function properly, or the cells being overburdened with toxins and too many factors for them to basically process. And so if we just simply made this cognitive shift that, hey, if I'm feeling unwell, if I'm not waking up every day feeling energetic, happy, absolutely limitless in my potential, then maybe I need to be reflecting on what aspects of my environment are either not meeting the needs of my cells or hurting my cells. And so I think about someone like your parent, like you're talking about. That's absolutely something, a reframe that every person could do of really tuning into what their body is saying, that does not require a medical degree. It does not require reading any research. It requires simply reframing the experiences we're having every day as information from our body about what it needs. And that doesn't involve any wearables, any lab testing. Certainly, if we want to unlock, I think, the highest levels of longevity and metabolic health, like I said, like sort of the level that has really, I think, never been accessible in human history, it's pairing that amazing body wisdom with some of these incredible biomarkers and testing that we have access to, the biosensors, the wearables, et cetera, to really fine tune. But the core foundation is accessible to everyone. And that's literally just a reframe in the understanding of the fact that our bodies are constantly communicating with us about what they need. And we need to learn how to listen and not, and wake up from the brainwashing that we've had from these systems, these large institutions of trust like healthcare and, you know, the USDA and the people who make our food guidelines, that basically say, like, we have the answers and you don't need to think about it. And when you have a problem, come to us, we'll give you a pill, we'll wipe it out. That's a problem.
I love the theory of symptoms are a gift from your body. They're basically speaking to you and telling you what's, you know, if something's wrong. And then I really, this is where blood biomarkers come into it, because I think that we have to take the, this is what I always say. Why did my body think it was a good idea to do this? And I'll give you an example. I don't know the statistics, but there are many people in the US who have vitamin D deficiency. Myself, I had it as well, which I've discussed with you. I think I had a reading back in September of 20 nanograms per deciliter, which is screamingly low, and it is extremely deficient. Now, most people would look at their blood work, or even look at what, you know, their PCP will look at their blood work and say, yep, you've got low vitamin D here. I'm going to give you 5,000 or even scarily 10,000 IUs of vitamin D, without recognizing that, A, do you have a magnesium deficiency? For example, I've seen in many cases that you can raise the levels of vitamin D in your blood without even taking vitamin D, with just taking magnesium, because we need magnesium to synthesize the vitamin D. Or another potential factor could be, why did my body think it was good to lower vitamin D? Maybe it's because we've got heavy metal or toxic exposure in our body. In the presence of metal, we lower vitamin D. So I think about this often, this whole notion of symptoms and listening to our body and actually asking yourself, if you have a headache, Why did my body think it was a good idea to inflict pain in this area of my body? Maybe you don't want to think about it for a headache, but maybe start to think about it like this, even gut dysbiosis. Like, why does my body think it's a good idea? Like, what am I not putting in my gut? What am I not feeding my gut for it to feel this way and be in such dysfunction? Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I think one framework that I have for the body that really motivates me is like, I have these 40 trillion cells in my body. I have 40 trillion human cells. I have 100 trillion or so bacterial cells in my body. And each of them, they're unable to speak to me through words. They can't communicate with me through language. And so they're communicating with me through symptoms and through potentially diseases that emerge, or they're communicating to me through a sense of like total peace and happiness and just a sense of being that is also a way of communicating, right? It's just communicating to me like everything's good. And I, as the whole self, the self that is essentially the summation of all these cells, like I am basically the mother to all these cells. These are my 40 trillion, you know, human children cells, my 100 trillion bacterial cells. And since they can't speak to me through language, like a baby can't talk to you and tell you what it needs, it's just going to scream, right? And the cells screaming is the symptoms. And so it's my job to, just like as I would with an infant, to just run through the basic checklist of what does a cell need and is that cell getting it? Mm. And the beauty of molecular biology research and cellular biology, sort of biochemical, nutritional biochemistry research, more cell signaling research, that's really where I spend the most of my time on PubMed, because it's there that we can really start to understand, like, what are the components, what are the molecular and energetic components that cells in the body need to function properly? Like, we literally just need, you know, certain types of fatty acids to make up our cell membranes. We need specific micronutrients as enzymatic cofactors for our electron transport chain. We need certain micronutrients to make a selenoprotein. It needs selenium. Like, it's pretty basic stuff. And so it's taking stock of sort of the basic factors of our life and then seeing, like, where am I crushing and where do I need to kind of lean in a little bit? You know, with a baby, a newborn, it's like, does it need to change a diaper? Does it need milk? Does it need to sleep? Does it need a change in temperature? And I think for our human cells, it's basically like, how's the food? How's the stress environment? How's the movement? How's the sleep? How's the light exposure that it's been getting? What's the toxin environment? What's the temperature environment? Those are the main pillars. So it's like, okay, you know, and then the way that I communicate then with my cells is by putting them in an environment that gives them those signals. So one way that I can communicate with my cells is through food, which will break down into molecules, which then is information that I'm giving to them. Another way I can communicate with my cells is through energetic signals like temperature, heat, and cold. Another way I can communicate with my cells is through photons. I can literally give it photons, or I cannot, by exposing it to sunlight. So that's a way, amazing, I think, of thinking about, yeah, how to connect with your body. And when you communicate clearly to your body through the signals that it expects, wants, and needs to function properly, we magically have health and the symptoms melt away. And when we don't, we will get cries and those will be our symptoms. So until you move towards a state that is really like symptom free, it means there is room for better communication. And like one specific example of this is like, I think of essentially food cravings, and I talk about this in the book, in the section, one of my favorite chapters of the book, which is essentially the six principles of good energy eating, this good energy metabolic health framework in the book. And one of them is that cravings are a signal from your body that you are giving it mixed messages in regard to food. And it kind of actually goes back to the intersects with the Ozempic conversation. Because if you think about cravings, they are fundamentally rooted in the satiety mechanisms of the body not being triggered appropriately, When we eat whole, real, natural food filled with all the nutrients the body needs, the nutrient sensing cells of the gut have that communication with them, which then causes them to communicate back with hormones that tell us not to be hungry. But when it doesn't have those needs met, when we don't give it the real, natural, unprocessed food filled with the micronutrients that it needs, the body is going to keep asking for more to have its needs met. And that's cravings, essentially. So we should look at these. You know, so many Americans are dealing with insatiable cravings for certain foods. And I think what's just a framework that people can adopt is, okay, if I can actually give these nutrient sensing cells what they need, they will produce the chemical that relinquishes my craving. And that's essentially freedom, right? Because craving is essentially the root of suffering, and lack of craving is freedom. So the reason this intersects with the Ozempic conversation is that, like, Ozempic is a GLP-1 agonist, right? That in a sense makes us, you know, crave less food. And what's wild to just, you know, step back and realize, like, we are actually GLP-1 agonists ourselves. If we stimulate those cells of the gut to make GLP-1, like, that's just going to work in our favor to make us less hungry. And there's been lots of research that shows what nutrients in food stimulate the nutrient sensing cells of the gut to produce this hormone. And it's the things you'd expect. It's amino acids from protein.
Yeah.
It's short chain fatty acids, which are the microbial fermentation byproduct of fiber intake. It's the things we know are quote unquote healthy, but part of the reason they're healthy is that they create a signal to the body to secrete the hormones that we need to make us satiated. So that's kind of a framing that I think can be helpful for thinking about some of these concepts.
So what I love most and what I took from that is how we actually communicate, which I never thought about this, how we communicate with ourselves is through food and temperature and photons, sunlight. Now, okay, let's just say that's how we communicate with the cells. How can we assess how well our cells are functioning? Is that specifically what blood work is?
And that's exactly right. So one of the ways that we can tell how our cells are functioning is through symptoms. And the second way that we can tell how our cells are functioning is through our biomarkers. But it's not looking at our biomarkers the way that we traditionally think. Because the way that doctors are traditionally trained to look at biomarkers is very algorithmic. If the potassium is low, then we need more potassium to bring it up. And if the LDL is high, then we need a statin to bring it down. And it's literally that algorithmic. And my challenge for both the medical system, but also for individuals, is to shift from thinking of biomarkers as little knobs we need to turn to bring down into range and actually think of them in conversation with each other as a way to understand what's actually happening inside the cell. How can you read them together and actually see what the tea leaves are saying about underlying physiology? And a point that I present as part of the thesis of this book, Good Energy, is that there are three main physiologic processes in the body that are underlying almost every symptom and every disease in the Western world. And that is the trifecta of bad energy. And that trifecta is oxidative stress, chronic inflammation, and mitochondrial dysfunction. And those three are a cycle that all feed into each other. But if you go on PubMed and you put in almost any symptom or disease and search one of those three terms, you are going to find dozens of papers that talk about the true cell signaling underlying those diseases. And if literally you could look at arthritis, migraine, Alzheimer's dementia, obesity, fatty liver disease, stroke, bad perimenopausal symptoms, and you're going to find something about oxidative stress, chronic inflammation, or mitochondrial dysfunction. So when we think about biomarkers, we want to figure out how to use them to understand if those processes are happening in the body, which is essentially a higher level unlock than just looking at the biomarkers as individual things that need to be adjusted.
So I want to go back to this trifecta, and I just want to understand, what is the difference between oxidative stress and chronic inflammation?
Great question. So oxidative stress sounds like a fancy, complex term, but it's actually a term that we all need to become super familiar with because, as I said, oxidative stress is one of the key underlying physiologic dysfunctions that is leading to most of the suffering that we're dealing with in our bodies. So we kind of have to understand it. We all do. We have to take ownership for it. And the way I think about oxidative stress is fundamentally it's a molecule in the body that has an unpaired electron. And that electron is negatively charged and it wants to bind with something to neutralize itself. It's like this molecule. It has this unruly, unpaired electron that wants to go around and bind to things. And when it does find something to bind to, it will. And in doing so, it will cause dysfunction. So if there's a molecule with that unpaired electron that binds to DNA, that can create dysfunction in the DNA. If it binds to fat in the cell membrane, it can cause dysfunction in the cell membrane. If it binds to a protein to neutralize itself, it can cause dysfunction in that protein. So oxidative stress is when there's too many of these molecules that are reactive floating around in the body. They're called free radicals, and it's overwhelming the body's natural capacity to healthily neutralize them. So then this brings in the concept of antioxidants. So these are things we hear about in our food. We want to have an antioxidant-rich diet. We want to take antioxidant vitamins. The reason these things are valuable, the reason fruits and vegetables are, you know, healthy for us and spices and tea and things like that is because they're filled with antioxidants. And actually many of the plant chemicals that cause plants to have color, so the pigments in the plants are actually antioxidants, which is why they say, you know, eat the rainbow so we can get diversity. So antioxidants come into the body and they bind those reactive molecules so that those reactive molecules don't bind with things in your cells and cause dysfunction. Oxidative stress is when that process is overwhelming the cell. Now, let's say you have a fat in the cell membrane that is getting bound to by a free radical and creating essentially this unnatural, combination, that's going to look a little funny to the cell. And the cell's going to say, huh, this is not normal. I don't like this. I haven't seen this before. So that's a threat signal to the body. And that can generate chronic inflammation. So oxidative stress can create essentially dysfunctional molecules in the cell, which trigger the defense system of the body, the immune system, to mount a chronic inflammatory response. Chronic inflammation then feeds into mitochondrial dysfunction because the cytokines, the inflammatory mediators that these inflammatory cells are constantly spewing out, they actually block insulin signaling. So the process that allows the body to take up glucose into the cell to be processed by the mitochondria, that is actually blocked by some of the cytokines released by the immune system. What's fascinating is that when you then generate mitochondrial dysfunction, one of the key sources of free radicals in the body is when the mitochondria is not working properly. You can kind of think of free radicals and oxidative stress as kind of like car exhaust. It's sort of like these reactive molecules that kind of get spewed out during excess metabolic work or activity. Well, if the mitochondria is dysfunctional, and we know we are creating mitochondrial dysfunction in this country from so many things, from our ultra-processed diet, from our omega-6 heavy diet, from the lack of sleep that we're getting, from being sedentary, from the toxins we're exposed to, all of that is leading to our mitochondria being problematic. And so, like an old car, it's spewing out more exhaust. It's spewing out more free radicals. So you've got this perfect storm of mitochondrial dysfunction leading to free radicals, which lead to dysfunctional molecules in the cell, which upregulate chronic inflammation. Chronic inflammation spews out inflammatory cytokines. Those block insulin signaling. That blocks metabolic function. This is the cycle of metabolic dysfunction. This is the bad energy trifecta. This is the root of almost every symptom and chronic disease facing Americans today. And the American healthcare system is totally blind to this, totally ignorant of this. Instead, they're playing whack-a-mole medicine with the downstream manifestations of metabolic dysfunction, the downstream symptoms of all this shit show happening inside the cell, and just trying to tweak the symptoms without doing anything to heal the core trifecta of dysfunction happening inside the cell.
Now, do you think that they know that this is happening? Because I know you say the medical system and big pharma, or do you think that they're really just playing and salivating on us getting these disease states to potentially, you know, increase their investments?
I think on the biochemistry level, I think the average doctor has no idea about this. If you go into...
Which is so scary, by the way. It is so scary to know that the regular doctor does not understand biochemistry.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if I went to some, a lot of the people I know who are still in the healthcare system who are esteemed, you know, ear, nose, and throat surgeons or liver surgeons or internal medicine doctors, and I said, you know, talk to me about the main diseases that you're treating, sinusitis, fatty liver disease, high cholesterol, hypertension, and draw me a picture of what is going on inside the cells that's leading to those diseases, you would get an absolute blank stare. Everything that is going to be said is essentially going to be multiple steps downstream of that dysfunction. And I think what people really need to internalize is that, because I think a lot of people listening might be thinking, well, like, how is migraine and my knee arthritis and dementia, like, I don't like, of course, we're going to see different doctors for these things because they're obviously different diseases. But I think what people need to realize is that they're all branches of the same tree in many ways. And our body has over 200 cell types in the body. So the body is made of so many different specialized types of cells. We've got ovarian theca cells, we have endothelial cells, we have glial cells, we have astrocytes, we have hepatocytes, we have, you know, cardiac myocytes. We have all these different types of cells. But all those cells fundamentally need cellular energy to function properly. They need mitochondrial function to generate cellular energy so that they're powered. And when that bad energy trifecta is at play, and therefore the cell is unable to produce cellular energy properly, that is going to look like different symptoms based on which cell type it is showing up in. So underpowering in a cardiac myocyte is going to look different than underpowering in an astrocyte. And that's going to look different than underpowering in an endothelial cell of the blood vessel lining of the penis versus an ovarian theca cell. One is going to look like Alzheimer's. One is going to look like migraine. One's going to look like heart failure. One's going to look like erectile dysfunction. One's going to look like polycystic ovarian syndrome. But that doesn't change the fact that inside the cell, there is likely happening oxidative stress, mitochondrial dysfunction, and chronic inflammation in and around that cell. And then, of course, when that cell type becomes dysfunctional because it's underpowered because of the resultant mitochondrial dysfunction and metabolic dysfunction, it looks like something different. But the reason that we are spending $4 trillion on healthcare increasing every year, and actually outcomes are getting worse. We're spending more, outcomes are getting worse. We're becoming more specialized. We have over 40 medical specialties now. The more specialties we create, the worse the outcomes are getting. The more studies we're doing, the worse the outcomes are getting. The reason for this is because we are missing the fact of what is actually happening on the physiologic level that's leading to these chronic illnesses, and we're just focusing on symptom management. If we turned the arrow of that $4 trillion of healthcare spending towards the very center of the cell, towards the mitochondria, towards the trifecta of bad energy, of ameliorating oxidative stress, mitochondrial dysfunction, and chronic inflammation, our healthcare crisis would evaporate.
And I guess that's what Good Energy is, your book, which is how can we address this trifecta? And actually in it, you kept saying the word, you know, you said liver surgeon. And I know in your book, you discuss certain biomarkers when it comes to blood work, and you particularly point out liver function tests, which is something that is maybe not spoken about, and it's not really part of the conversation. So why is it? Why aren't people talking about just getting something so simple as an LFT tested twice a year?
Right. Yeah. This is like a $15 test, AST and ALT. And these are really interesting proteins that are made in liver cells, and they are essentially released into circulation when liver cells die or become damaged. And I think a key thing to understand is that the liver literally could not be more important in our overall metabolism and our ability to make good energy in the body, because it's the first site of all nutrient delivery from the gut, from circulation. It goes straight from the gut to the liver. And the liver also has a direct connection with the pancreas, which is what makes insulin. And it has a very special blood supply called the portal vein between the pancreas and the liver. So if the liver becomes metabolically dysfunctional because of what we're eating and how we're living, and it becomes insulin resistant because of that chronic inflammation that we know impairs insulin signaling, there's a direct connection with the pancreas to essentially pump out more insulin to try and overcome that insulin resistance. And now we become hyperinsulinemic, and that circulates all throughout the body, and insulin causes havoc everywhere. And then we start storing fat because insulin is our, you know, fat storage hormone. So basically, we want the liver to be pristine. We want the liver to have no bad energy. We want minimal chronic inflammation, minimal oxidative stress, minimal mitochondrial dysfunction in the liver, because it's essentially like home base for metabolism. So if AST and ALT are high in the bloodstream when we test our biomarkers, it is a clear sign to us that there is liver cell damage. And most likely, that liver cell damage is going to be caused by the foods we eat or by alcohol use, because alcohol, of course, is processed by the liver. And it's definitely, I think, the combination of our heavy, heavy drinking culture and our heavy ultra-processed food culture of 70% of our calories coming from ultra-processed food, which just completely overwhelm the liver's capacity to process all that super dense energy substrate. It's just like so much for the liver to handle. Together, you're creating a dysfunctional liver. So what's a travesty is that the normal range for liver function tests, so for ALT, if you go on the Mayo Clinic website, the normal range is 7 to 55, and AST is 8 to 48.
7 to 55 is like, it's like, what
does that even mean, right? And so if you actually look at the research, it suggests that all-cause mortality starkly increases when AST and ALT levels rise above 17. So that is leaving so much room where if you just literally look at the graphs in the papers of liver function tests and all-cause mortality, that curve starts going up sharply at about 17. So if I'm looking at that, I'm saying I'd like to be as close to 17 or below as possible. And I think that it's just such a blind spot of medicine that we just allow these really large ranges, because it's essentially giving people this like veil of, you know, like, oh, I'm okay, when in fact, there's probably tons they could be doing to clean up their lifestyle, but they're not even being told it's a problem. So that's a test that I recommend for everyone. And it's not sexy. No one talks about it. And yet if your liver is dysfunctional, you're going to have a shorter and much, much sicker life.
Well, I love that you put the reference ranges, but you know what I think is really fascinating about the liver? It is the only organ that can hypertrophy itself. So like, I think to myself, huh, fatty liver disease, huh? Like, cutting a piece out of your liver, like if for you to really damage the liver, maybe let's say you've got a reading of 25 AST and 25 ALT, like you have to be doing some harsh, harsh things to get a reading of that. Like even for me, which I want everybody to know that my AST and ALT is about 15 or 16, cross-referenced by Casey, which is pretty good. I mean, I would love it to be 14. We'll get there. However, like I think to myself, God, how can someone even get above, like get to 55? Like they've got to be doing some harsh things.
I mean, I think it's quite simple in our country to be at a 55. I think there's a lot of people there. And if you think about it, So we are drinking so much liquid fructose in our culture, right? Liquid fructose is a weapon of mass destruction. It was invented in the 1970s. And what it does is it goes straight to the liver, this liquid fructose in the form of high fructose corn syrup that kids are just wolfing down. And every single molecule of fructose has got to be processed. Can you imagine, you know, if all of a sudden someone came to you and said, oh, you're going to need to do 50 times more work than you did yesterday. That's essentially what's happening to our bodies. We didn't have this molecule 100 years ago. And now our bodies are having to process, by some reports, up to 3,000% more fructose than we did historically when we were just getting fructose from, you know, fiber-rich fruits. And so we're asking the liver to do up to 3,000% more work, and it has to break down every one of those molecules. So what happens? The liver is breaking down fructose, and one of the byproducts of fructose metabolism is uric acid. Uric acid rises. Uric acid is a direct mitochondrial inhibitor. It causes oxidative stress. It causes mitochondrial dysfunction. And what happens when you have a dysfunctional mitochondria? When you have a mitochondria that's not able to effectively turn food energy to cellular energy, i.e. glucose that's coming into the cell to ATP, it's going to say, hey, you know, this fructose is causing a lot of damage. I'm kind of broken here. I can't do all this. So it's going to shunt the glucose to fat. So now glucose is being repackaged as fat inside the cell or being exported to fat cells. So now you've got liver cells that are literally 3D printing toxic fat inside the cell, which literally blocks cell signaling inside the cell. So now you've got this fat-filled, dysfunctional liver cell that, of course, is going to be insulin resistant. So now insulin's going to rise in the body. And this is just status quo for the average American who's just grabbing a Coca-Cola on the airplane thinking that it's fine. Okay. So you've got that. Couple that with the 80,000 industrial synthetic toxins that have entered our food, water, air, and personal care products over the last 50 years, almost none of which have been tested for safety, many of which are mitochondrial disruptors. Layer that on top of it. Then layer on top of it the fact that we're sleeping 2 hours less per night than we did 100 years ago. And that's a huge generator of chronic inflammation and oxidative stress. So now you've got an inflamed, fat, insulin resistant, dysfunctional liver just from being an average American. Then throw on 7 to 20 drinks a week, like so many Americans who are literally then just pouring a toxic poison that's going to divert the resources of that liver towards breakdown of alcohol byproducts. This is such a big reason why we're chronically ill. And when you look at all the different pieces that are synergistically hurting our cells, it becomes so obvious why 93% of Americans have metabolic dysfunction, why 6 in 10 adults have a chronic illness. There's just the environment that we're living in has created such an overwhelming burden for our cells. And I think the way we need to approach it really is just with a deep sense of compassion for the overwhelm of our cells and start peeling back those burdens that are crushing our core physiology.
Oh my God. Boom, ba-boom, on top of boom. And you just, oh my God, it's scary because we are aging. You know, we've got, like you mentioned, like we have the power to not age as fast and not get ourselves into this state of dysfunction. However, I do think that even after listening to this podcast, even after getting all the education, I still think that people think that they are invincible because these disease states are not a one-time, you know, they don't happen. Like you don't go and drink 7 drinks in a week and then boom, liver damage. These happen and occur in the next 20 years. So it's very hard to convince somebody right now to do the things that you're doing because it doesn't affect you right now. And unfortunately, we also have to couple the fact that, yes, we are chronically stressed. Yes, negative emotions. You know, I just mentioned yesterday on a podcast that 1 in 6 marriages are failing. So then that comes with, how do I deal with that? I'll deal with that with food and alcohol and sleep deprivation. So it's a cascade of problems that are not just stemming from pharmaceutical companies or, you know, the marketing that we have from Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. It's also managing our emotions so we don't feel propelled to get into these states, to get into that cascade of damage, right?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a real message that I want to share is that I believe that all of the healing for our country, for ourselves, for our families, it all starts with mindset. It all starts with the psychological component, yeah. Because every cell in our body hears every single one of our thoughts through hormones and neurotransmitters and nerve impulses. And if the message they're hearing is that it's so hard and it's impossible to be healthy and, oh, of course, I'm just going to like expecting to be in a nursing home when I'm older and have sort of a slow decline towards death because that's just the way it is. Like, or oh, like it's in my family history, so it's probably something I'm going to have to deal with. Well, that certainly doesn't create an environment in which, you know, the cells are going to rise to the occasion. Like it's really, I think, starting with a mindset of abundance and of possibility and of hope creates a release on our nervous system, puts us more into that parasympathetic state of gratitude, abundance, safety, that allows our cellular resources to go towards thriving instead of fear. Mm. And if you think about the impact of cortisol and of chronic sympathetic nervous system overdrive on our biology, it takes you right back to the conversation about chronic inflammation. Again, one of the three core hallmarks of bad energy, of metabolic dysfunction. Chronic inflammation fundamentally is the defense system of the body responding to a threat, real or perceived. And when there is a sense of threat, the immune system is going to regulate, it's going to gear up and it's going to try and fight that battle. And these days, so many of the ways that we're living is basically being perceived as a threat by the body. Like lack of sleep is a threat signal to the body. And yes. The constant pings from our phone and the constant violence we're seeing on social media from all over the world, it's unprecedented. The amount of fear-inducing things that are just either in front of our eyeballs through this device in our hand or that are from the way we're living, you know, from sitting too much, from sleeping, from not sleeping enough. But I actually think one of the biggest ones, one of the biggest fears that we're dealing with in the Western world is actually just existential fear of death. Yeah. You know, I think something so unique about the Western world is that we just live in this very desanctified culture, very secular. We are petrified of death. We have a healthcare system that is so much more focused on doing anything to essentially, you know, prevent death than actually promoting thriving. We literally will keep people alive on ventilators and the ICU just in these terrible conditions because we're so petrified of death and yet spend very little resources on actually helping people thrive. And so if you think about it, by being a Westerner in our very sort of desanctified culture with very little curiosity or framework for cycles of life, for the eternal process of how life and death unfold in a continuous cycle, like so many Eastern and indigenous cultures have so deeply meditated on, what does that do to us? Mm. It puts us in an underlying, baseline, constant sense of existential fear about death. And the only antidote to that, in my opinion, is deep existential and spiritual inquiry, where we actually examine the true nature of our lives and of our reality and explore it and accept it and find awe in it and see ourselves connected in the greater cycle of all things that will be eternal. Mm. And understanding on every level. I mean, like, let's just take away any side of the spiritual level. The reality of the fact that, like, what is our body really? The Big Bang happened, what, 4.6 billion years ago? And matter and energy exploded out into this eternal universe. And at this moment in time, some of that matter is swirling together in such a way that we have a self. That's literally what's happening. That's not woo-woo. That's actually the reality. We are an atomic structure that's bound together for a very short period of time. And even during our lifetimes, we're constantly a swirl that's in dynamic converse. Every time we eat, we're taking in matter, we're excreting matter. And I think a lot about this Taoist concept that I think if we truly internalized it, it would help us get through this sense of existential fear that we have. The Taoist said, we are a process, not an entity. And I think in really believing that we are this thing that like sort of lives and dies, very binary, we put this intense sense of fear of death into our lives that fundamentally is a threat signal that's constantly there and that the immune system is always going to be responding to. And when we truly internalize that we are a process, we are a miraculous dynamic process, part of eternity, and that all things go through death and life, and that's okay. I think it's the ultimate release of fear that allows our bodies to finally be calm. And I think until Westerners start to explore that more and have frameworks for it, we are always going to have an underlining sense of deep existential threat that our bodies are always going to be responding to. And anything that is a threat that our bodies are responding to chronically is diverting resources that our body could be putting towards thriving.
Mm-hmm.
So we sort of have to address this. Yeah. Anyways, that's a long-winded, but I think it's just so, so missing from the healthcare conversation. And I also believe that doctors know this, and we weaponize the fear of death to get patients to do whatever we want them to do. Don't take this pill, you might die. Don't do this surgery, you might die. You know, don't keep your mom on the ventilator, she might die. And the reality is we're all going to die. These pills aren't going to prevent it. And in a sense, it's distracting us from a deep sense of peace in all of it that actually would unlock a higher level of thriving.
Yeah, I always say that even exercise should be considered a vital sign, because we have like so much research to show the power of exercise. Before you go, I just want to keep going with your book, because I know I've read it. I love it. When is it going out for everybody?
It comes out May 14th.
May 14th. Now, I know in there you've also got recipes. You're talking about the trifecta. You're making us healthy. And you also have not just blood work and different reference ranges, but you also, I believe, you talk to us in a way that helps us communicate better with our doctors and be able to advocate for ourselves and be able to choose the right doctors as well. So I love that about the book.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, like a key aspect of the book is, I think, the chapter on lab testing that's incredibly actionable. Yeah. For people who read the book, they can literally take the book with them to the doctor's office. They can sit down with the book with their labs that they have gotten from their doctor and just understand how to interpret them. And the chapter of that, the name of the chapter is called Your Body Has the Answers. And I really believe that. I believe it has the answers through the symptoms that you're experiencing and through the biomarkers that we can access very cheaply and easily today. So I hope that's a very empowering message for people and, you know, something that they can bring to the conversation with their doctors to really have the best possible outcomes.
Gosh, I cannot wait for everybody to get their hands on it. We're going to link it below. And you're on Instagram. Just tell us your Instagram handle.
I'm at Dr. Casey's Kitchen, Dr. Casey's Kitchen. And then on Twitter, I'm at Dr. Casey's Kitchen. My website is caseymeans.com. And the book is available wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your small bookstores in your neighborhood. So check it out.
Casey, thank you so much for being part of the Neuro Experience podcast.
Thank you, Louisa.